Hey, you. Yes, you, the listener. You can turn your great idea into a reality with Squarespace. They make it easier than ever to launch your passion project, whatever that might be. You just want to get it online and do it in the best way because, hey, it's the future. That's where things are. So don't wait. Head to squarespace.com/cracked for a free trial. And when you're ready to launch, use the offer code cracked to save 10% off your first purchase of a website or domain. In a world filled with fake news, flat earthers, and conspiracy theories, what's a thinking person like you supposed to do? Think like a skeptic, of course. On last week's episode of Star Talk All-Stars, neuroscientist Heather Berlin, PhD, and her comic co-host Ari Shaffir investigate the importance of skeptical thinking with their guests, Kara Santamaria and Dr. Stephen Novella of The Skeptic's Guide to the Universe. Remember, trust no one, question authority, and listen to Star Talk All-Stars wherever you listen to podcasts for the rigorous scientific thinking you crave. Hey there, folks. Welcome to another episode of the Cracked Podcast, the podcast all about why being alive is more interesting than people think it is. My name is Alex Schmidt, and I'm the head of podcasting here at Cracked. I'm also known as Schmitty the Clam. I'm also known as Schmitty the Champ. And I am also entering my seasonal period of Cold War thriller fandom. In my childhood, the holiday season meant cooling air and turning leaves and marathoning James Bond movies on cable TV. They would just play them. Thank you, Spike. Thank you, TNT. Thank you, other channels, I'm sure. And this time of year, I want stuff from that Cold War part of history synthesized into entertainment. It is a weird salmon-like instinct I have developed. I can't totally defend it. I just have it. It's the way I am. And that's my favorite historical fictional stuff. Maybe yours is something else. Maybe you want Westerns with skilled gunplay, or US presidents with gravitas, or ancient Romans with modern British accents. And all that's fun, but what if, instead of that fake stuff, we could have fully historically accurate movies that are also hilarious and basically cartoons? That very specific question brings us to this week's topic. The topic is historical facts that were way too stupid for the movies. The premise comes from a fantastic Cracked column co-written by your buddy and mine, returning guest Dan Hopper. Dan is a Cracked columnist and editor, my former College Humor colleague, and a Hollywood TV writer who made time for sharing bizarre real stuff with you and me today. We had so much fun taping this, and I think you'll have a lot of fun hearing it. So please sit back or keep sitting in the car you're using to stake out a Soviet command post, maybe. And then you're having like a dense conversation about code breaking and being sad and British and doing other things that I could just watch a million times. I don't know why. Either way, here's this episode of the Cracked Podcast with Dan Hopper. I'll be back after we wrap up. Talk to you then. Dan, we're coming up on a very exciting season of movies. I know it's a little away, but Oscar season, right? The season of historical movies. I feel like, especially with Oscar time, it becomes this drumbeat of, oh, we need to do like a historical biopic or something that that really makes the past amazing. These biopics and everything else, like, why do they need to be so serious? Not that you make them or something, but why do they need to be like so stentorian and, oh, look at this golden past?
As the writer and director of Get On Up, the James Brown biopic. No, just kidding. I feel like, you know, in the 90s, mid and late 90s, every Oscar movie was this epic 3-hour serious historical movie. And that's like what movies had to be great. And then I feel like we slightly got out of that for a little bit, and now movies are like very much back to that. In, you know, there's a lot of movies that aren't that, but like, you know, Lincoln was kind of like that. It was like there's one or two every year that come out in like November, December, The Theory of Everything. You know,
yeah,
stuff
it's
like
so
that.
Much of it is British too. It's almost always either a monarch or a scientist or Winston Churchill.
Yeah,
it's
yeah,
like what they do.
Darkest Hour. You had the Iron Lady.
Yeah,
it's very like right out of the 1995 formula of like epic historical thing that comes out in November, December and gets the lead person an Oscar, basically.
Yeah, right. It's like a giant audition for one person to show, like, as you can see, Eddie Redmayne knows what he's doing. Yeah. And so everyone needs to go see a movie to prove it.
You know? I don't buy it. I'm going to see Theory of Everything. It's like skeptical street tough.
Well, and you and many other Cracked writers put together a great column recently. It was kind of the start of this episode. We're doing 5 historical facts that were way too stupid for the movies by you, Alex Hanton, Taylor Dane, E.M. Karas, and James Freeth. I feel like you guys really hit a motherload of stuff that really happened and just it's not in movies because it would break up that sort of veneer of the past being amazing.
Yeah. I mean, there's countless examples of biopics or historical movies where they add tons of crazy crap to make it, you know, to make it movie-like. You know, they make things more epic or they make things more dramatic or they make it more concise. And you go in and it's like based on a true story or inspired by a true story. And you kind of know that, you know, oh, that's not really how that was. But I can accept it because it's a movie. It makes it more entertaining.
Yeah.
But this is a list of examples where the opposite happened. Where real life history was so ridiculous, they had to alter it in the movie because if they had just done the actual thing that happened, A, you wouldn't have believed it, or B, audiences would have laughed and it would have just taken you out of the thing.
Right. So, even though it was real, people would be like, this movie is some sort of Airplane the movie joke.
Yeah.
You know, this is
Or it's a 98% epic movie with like one weird joke and people cannot get over the weird part, you know, that kind of thing. And so it's like directors made the executive decision to make it less technically, less historically accurate in order to like save the realism. So it's kind of interesting and ironic in that way.
Yeah. And as we were getting this together, you'd picked out that it's from outside the column, but it's sort of a perfect textbook example of this, which happens with gladiators.
Yeah.
Roman gladiators.
There's a lot of, I guess there's evidence that back in, you know, in ancient Rome, that gladiators who got very popular did endorsements, just like modern day athletes. And so you literally would see gladiators on like a billboard for olive oil. And, you know, something like that, you know, like them smiling with a certain brand of olive oil and it's like draped on the side of a building or, you know.
Yeah.
And
well, even just the idea of Rome being full of advertising,
yeah.
I think is not that much of a thing in movies. Like usually it's just a bunch of pillars and some dust.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
But and in Rome, they would have advertisements for stuff like olive oil. And then gladiators would be the famous Michael Jordan style personality for it.
I think Ridley Scott looked into that and considered, you know, showing Russell Crowe's character, Maximus, like his popularity growing by him like appearing on ads, you know, or something like that.
Yeah.
And it's just too ridiculous. Like if in Gladiator, you know, you see like Commodus is walking down the street and he looks over and there's like an ad of like, you know, Russell Crowe holding like olive oil and giving a thumbs up or something.
Yeah.
And he's like, he's capturing the people. Like it'd be like the stupidest thing imaginable, but they have to, but that would have happened.
Right, you know? Like, he's got a sandal deal. Oh,
yeah.
No. It's all falling apart.
Yeah. Back in my day, it was about the gladiating. It wasn't about all the these young gladiators just want their names on sandals.
Right. Well, you know, I love that modern pro sports thing of, you know, they used to be more loyal to their teams. But, like, with gladiators, the team would be not Lions.
Yeah.
It's like, he signed with Lions. Jeez.
It used to be about lining up 100 animals and slaughtering them like while they're tied down, and that was entertainment for a long time. It was
we've got an Entertainment Weekly article from around when the movie Gladiator came out in 2000, and producer Douglas Wick said gladiators endorse products, but if you cut to Russell Crowe endorsing a chariot or olive oil, that would become parody when in fact it's true, end quote. So they really thought about like, we could do this real thing, but people will just find it silly because of their conception of history.
Yeah.
So we can't.
Just imagine a movie like Gladiator that's trying to be very epic. It's like going for the Oscar. Well, it was a summer movie, so it wasn't as Oscar-baity as some, but it was still like a 3-hour Ben-Hur type Roman epic. And there's just one scene where it's like, you know, cut to smiling Russell Crowe and like a tagline or something like, you know, the Max olive oil for the Max gladiator, you know, Maximus, like a signature of Maximus on the thing or something like that.
Right. And like when I want to dip a piece of bread in something.
Yeah. And Commodus walks through the streets and he sees all these little kids like, yeah, like drinking the olive oil, like, you know, and he's like, Maximus is getting too popular. And then it just goes right back to, you know, rest of serious movie. The whole audience would be like, wait, what just happened there? Like
that movie does sort of elaborately interesting things, right? Like there's parts of Gladiator where he's in a sort of symbolic field of grain thinking about his wife and the afterlife. And they really go for it with some really wild parts. Mm-hmm. And they felt like just people would laugh at this historical thing if they did it.
Yeah. As he's like dying at the end, he's like imagining his seeing his wife and children in Elysium or whatever. And yeah, like you can get away with like that magical realism, but not what actually happened in history, which is, you know, that's funny.
Yeah.
History. Sometimes real life is stranger than fiction, Alex. That's what I think.
As we look at the things you guys pulled in this article, one of my favorites is this thing from the Cold War. Because in particular, I've been seeing a lot of movies like Atomic Blonde lately, where the Cold War is dramatic, right? Like it was this really intense standoff with all kinds of spy craft and people being real serious about going after each other. And then you guys found this story about the CIA avoiding KGB tails in the 70s with a pretty fun strategy.
Yeah, apparently this happened more than once where the CIA would use sex dolls.
Oh.
Yes.
Yeah, like the inflatable
product. Yeah, love dolls, which I honestly didn't even realize were around in whatever the 60s and 70s. But
yeah, it's relatively advanced for them.
Right. but they would literally blow them up like a Naked Gun type joke or something like that. But they would literally blow them up, leave them in the car, and then like leave the car and make it look like someone was still in it or something like that. And it was just, you know, the KGB with like binoculars looking and seeing the back of a head and not realizing it's the back of the head of an inflatable sex doll. And that was an actual thing that happened. And could you imagine putting any part of that in, you know, Bridge of Spies or like anything, like just something so dark and, you know, atmospheric. And then it's just like,
right, like Tinker, Tailor, Soldier,
blow up doll. Yeah, you know, all these drab offices and guys in trench coats walking around with documents and stuff. And then it's just very purposefully like, like Gary Oldman blowing up a doll and just like, you know, getting red in the face. Just like, oh, man.
I'm realizing I don't think I've ever seen a movie where anybody blows up anything inflatable and you watch, you are never less cool than when you're struggling with a pool raft or whatever, just trying to fill it all the way. So that alone would be great.
Yeah, just like an air mattress or something like that. Yeah, just like the logistics of this kind of confuse me because it's like, I don't know how the KGB, who are expert surveillers, didn't see the part where they were like inflating the doll and leaving it there or whatever. It's like,
right,
the fact that anyone was fooled by this even once is mind blowing. Yeah.
Because the mechanic of this, right, it's you've got CIA agent in a car, KGB agent tailing them from another car. And then at some point, the CIA, they stop the car and then inflate a doll to be in the driver's seat instead of them while they, I assume, like crouch out of another door or something.
Yeah.
Amazing.
Yeah. And so, yeah. So just imagine a movie where that is like how they lose the tail or something. I was going to say, imagine it in a James Bond movie, but he does some ridiculous crap. I feel like you could do it in a James Bond movie.
Oh, those Moore movies in the 80s?
Yeah.
Oh, baby. Yeah.
There's a one where he sneaks up on a guy by pretending he's making out with himself. One of the 80s Moore ones, I think.
Yeah.
He's like waiting for some guy to return home to go to his apartment. And then he's going to like break in as the guy's going into his door. And so he's like waits nearby when the guy comes home. And he does that thing where you like hug yourself and look like you're making out with a person.
Oh, right. Like but you touch your own back.
Yeah.
A lot.
He like grabs his own back.
Yeah.
And like the guy walks by him and then it like pans over and then it's James Bond doing it and it's by himself. And then he follows the guy in. And then also, it's not clear how long he was waiting there. So he was, could have been making out with himself for, you know, 45 minutes. But it's right out of a, like, rock-bottom, ridiculous Roger Moore Bond movie. If he blew up a doll. And even then, they probably would. It wouldn't be like a sex doll. It would be like a mannequin or something. Like, maybe you could get away with it. And then it's like, even in a goofy movie, it would be like the goofiest part where he like fools a guy with a mannequin. And there was the CIA and KGB actually doing it in real life, like multiple times.
Because as I'm thinking of it, in Bond movies, they have that standard scene where Q shows Bond the gadgets. Uh-huh. And it's always like a non-sexual gadget, and then Bond makes a joke about it. So then in this movie, you wrong-foot him with the gadget is a blow-up doll, and he has just to be like, sex. Like, that's all he's got.
Yeah.
Well, and this, because also in the article about this doll thing, too, apparently they inflated the dolls by attaching them to the airbag system of the car. And so it was called a jib, a jack-in-box, and they would somehow use the airbag system. It sounds like it's basically that exact thing from the movie Airplane with the autopilot, where it just inflates in the seat. It sounds like the CIA was doing that in real life.
Yeah, again, like in Airplane, one of the goofiest parts that they do, they hit the autopilot button and this like inflatable pilot guy comes up and then like later it looks like he's getting a blowjob and that's like all goofy. And that was like like actual covert strategy in like, you know, during the Cold War, where if you were caught, you would be like tortured. And,
right.
You know, if this doesn't work, if the you know, airplane inflatable pilot guy trick doesn't work, you get captured, tortured, and it's like an international incident where like it's either international news and you have to like prisoner exchange, or the country has to like bury the story and disavow knowledge of you as you're being tortured and killed and stuff. And it's like,
right, like Ghost Protocol. Like you were never there.
This all hinges on literally picturing the airplane pilot. like I hope they buy that the back of that inflatable thing's head is me, so I can sneak out of the car and continue espionaging. You know, that would be in like the late 90s Leslie Nielsen spoof of spy movies, basically. You could never do that in a real spy movie, but it was real.
Yeah, well, and speaking of great just pitches for Leslie Nielsen characters, there's another thing here from the end of the Cold War, because it basically ended the Cold War. There's in Six Tiny Mistakes That Shaped Huge Parts of Modern History by Alexander Pan, and the fall of the Berlin Wall was, I had thought, very serious situation, right? Like we decided to end the Cold War there. Mm-hmm. And it turns out it was mostly based on a mistake by a guy running a press conference.
Yeah, I apparently he was like a minor official too, right?
Gunter Schabowski is his name. Well, he's like an East German official in Berlin,
Yeah, who was like a bureaucrat, you know, something like that. It wasn't like any head of state or military or anything like that. Yeah. Was announcing minor protocol changes about citizen movement between the countries or something. And apparently whatever he announced technically opened up travel to the extent where people would then started freely flowing, and it quickly accelerated the end of the Berlin Wall, which may have happened anyway, but it's really funny to imagine this like just like wormy like little like guy reading points off of a piece of paper in a movie. You know, I'm picturing like a cartoon turtle like being like, you know, you may now go between countries freely. And then like a huge crowd like tramples him, and he's like just a huge crowd of like East Germans running across the border, like bowls him over. And then he just comes up and he's like covered all black, and he's just like, oh dear.
Because in the story of it, apparently the Gunter wasn't totally aware of all the exact specifics of like this very minor travel change he was announcing. And then people asked him some kind of question like, so you mean everyone can go immediately? And he didn't hear it totally right. And he was like, yeah, this happens immediately. Yeah. And then from there, the Soviet Union collapsed after a few weeks, I think.
What was that? Yeah, sure. Yeah, fine. Yeah, that's international law now.
Yeah,
and it was Gunter like, is even the joke name you would give the, you know, the character, right?
right.
Like way too on the nose.
That article, it has one other Cold War thing about the Bay of Pigs invasion. or operation where apparently the two parts of it were 1,500 Cuban mercenaries would land on the beach as sort of infantry. And then meanwhile, air cover would come from a U.S. base in Nicaragua and fly over them. But in real life, what happened was they didn't totally double check the difference in time zones between Cuba and Nicaragua. And so the planes were an hour late because the U.S. CIA government messed up.
I kind of sympathize with that one because I mess it up all the time. I've been on the West Coast for 2.5 years and I mess up the time calculation nonstop. I find that
who among us?
That international horror very relatable to me. but I do like that the entire government is making the same mistake as like you and you like set your alarm a little wrong or something and then you're like, whoops, I'm such a goofball. And it's you look at your clock and it's like, you know, PM or something like that. And you're like, oh, I set my alarm for 8 PM. It's like that level of mistake undermined an international coup and was like one of the messiest fallouts in the last 50 years because of who knows what would have happened if they got the times right. But the fact that they messed up such a stupidly simple thing is, I guess it's funny now.
It impacted people. If you did that in a movie, it would be like, are you doing some kind of Leslie Nielsen Spy Hard type film where all the spies are dumb? Like, is that the premise of your movie?
And it'd Leslie be like, Nielsen
no, it's
a
very serious
here.
Thing.
Yeah. I feel like it would almost read like if you had a guy mess that up in a movie, it would almost be like, we made a movie about the Bay of Pigs. We couldn't politically make it so that Kennedy and like the U.S. government was like complicit and terrible. So we had to like create a character who messed up the time zones. And it was like that guy's fault because they were like, we got to still make the soldiers and the government heroic. So we need to create a character who messes things up badly so the audience can be mad at him. And that guy messes up like the time zones. And that's why the Bay of Pigs invasion doesn't work.
Right.
Like that feels like if you saw it in a movie, you would be like, oh, they made that up to exaggerate how bungled this was.
Yeah.
And to like get people off the hook for the ideology of it. And in reality, they just messed it up that badly. It's ridiculous.
It would probably play like it's not a historical movie, but in The Departed, the part where they're doing the sting and then somebody on the team makes a mistake and Mark Wahlberg's like, oh, I'm the guy who does his job. You must be the other guy. You know, like they would say that to the time zone guy.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Like there would be some fun scene like that.
Yeah. Man, in researching ridiculous historical stuff for Cracked, because we do that so often, there are so many insane slapstick plots to assassinate Castro. There are millions of them, including I don't think it ever was put into play, but there was like talk of a trick cigar, like no joke. Like if you thought of like a goofy
from
joke
from Acme, I'm sure.
Yeah. If you thought of like a goofy joke way to assassinate Castro, that would be like the hackiest one you could come up with. It's like, oh, he's always got a cigar, trick cigar, Cuba, cigars, whatever. And like they actually like considered it at high levels of government, which is it's great.
One of the other ones was they were going to put thallium salts on some part of his clothes, and then that would cause his beard hairs to fall off. And so then he would just look dumb not having a beard. And that was supposed to destabilize it somehow. It sounds like I'm just riffing, but I believe that was one of the actual mold CIA plots.
The powder would make his pants fall off, and then a spotlight hits him, and he looks up and then covers himself and then like shuffles off stage. Like the cartoon version we're explaining is like 20% crazier than the real thing, right?
Yes. Yeah. Fidel Castro's duck bill didn't end up on top of his head and put it back on his face. But otherwise, it's real. For my Daffy Duck heads out there. In the article, you guys also picked out a thing that is kind of still true, but especially in World War II, they were starting to figure out, hey, we have these very advanced planes, like fighter jets and bombers and stuff. The pilots are up there a long time. How do they go to the bathroom?
Yeah, I researched this one because I was thinking, I actually originally was thinking like, I wonder how often pilots throw up in planes and if that was a thing that
got you into this?
Yeah,
oh, that's great.
If they leave that out. And it didn't come up that often. Like there wasn't that much research about it, but there's a lot of research about the history of peeing and pooping in planes. And it is a reality that pilots today deal with. It's like a big deal. And there's no cool way to do it. There's no efficient way to do it. It's like barely advanced technologically, but yeah. It's a reality of anyone who gets in a fighter jet, or especially like in, you know, World War II, those like long mission bombers, they have to have like a little toilet. And it's basically, it's a chemical toilet. It's basically just like a little, like almost like a portable trash can filled with like whatever, like the blue liquid from like, you know, from your barber shop or something like that.
Right.
and that's it. And it's like freestanding. It's just sitting there and you have to pee in it or squat over it and do your business. And if you're doing a long trip like that, also you have to stay hydrated when you're flying, because the altitude, like you could pass out if you don't constantly drink water.
So like, yeah.
So you can't just not drink water. And so like everyone has to do it. And so all of those like World War II movies or wherever, where they're doing like a long mission or something, at some point someone is going to walk over and squat over this little chemical toilet and just shit in front of everyone else.
Right. It's very in the open.
In the open. You know, you're within feet of, you know, five or six other people. The smell, who can even imagine what the smell is like? Even after you're done, it's just going to smell like shit for the entire rest of the time. And then guess what? There's tons of turbulence. So as you're peeing or pooping, you're missing the thing. You're peeing all over the place. Or even after you're done, it's still just this little freestanding toilet in this tiny area.
Yeah.
If there's any turbulence at all, the thing tips over and falls and the crew's poo spills out everywhere.
Right.
And so,
which you never see in a World War II movie.
You'll
see guys climbing around the bomber maybe, and then the little turret, especially if it's one of the like classic World War II movies, but you never see them take a break to use the bathroom or take evasive maneuvers and poo flies through.
Yeah,
the
it's
background.
Just, there's just shit flying around, like literal shit flying around everywhere was happening all the time in that era.
Yeah.
And you like, yeah.
Well, and if somebody put that, if somebody like made a World War II movie today and prominently feature that in their movie, how mad would we all be?
Yeah.
We'd be like, you are insulting my great grandparents
who
fought so hard by doing this poo joke in the middle. I'm so mad at you.
It's just Saving Private Ryan at the end where he's like, Tom Hanks is like dying and he's shooting his revolver at the tank or whatever. And then the tank explodes and then it reveals that like a bomber destroyed it or something like that. And it's like a big climactic thing. And then they cut inside the bomber and everyone's just covered in shit. Just like we did and they're just like, or and the whole thing smells like shit and has for months, but hours.
Whole mission,
yeah. And then even today, there's not an elegant solution. You can hook up a relief tube to your crotch if you're in a fighter jet.
Yep, what it sounds like, right?
Which is it's just a tube. Or I think a lot of pilots just will carry a bottle into the cockpit with them.
And like a trucker or something.
Yeah, like an empty 20-ounce bottle or something like that.
Yeah, wow.
And just we'll just pee into that. And so in Top Gun, if there's a long mission, or in Star Wars movies, you know, if these X-Wings are going on long flights, you know, Luke is saying goodbye to them. And, you know, they like toss them like an artifact and they put it around their neck or something. They're like, you know, remember me. And they're clutching like the necklace or, you know, stuff like that. The last step every time is them hooking a tube up to their crotch or putting an empty bottle into the cockpit. So
yeah, because it's a real thing that when George Lucas was making A New Hope, he was looking at old World War II movies to like help him direct the dogfights of the combat. So I feel like that makes it canon that these Star Wars spaceships are basically World War II planes. So probably same deal.
All of those X-Wings, Wedge, Luke, they all had empty 20-ounce Mountain Dew bottles in their thing, and at some point pissed in it. It's in the special edition DVD where he stops and pees. He doesn't have to look down because he just knows. He just feels the force, and Luke just pisses perfectly into the bottle. You know, he doesn't have to look down and adjust. He just, you know, he closes his eyes and just pees, and it's like perfect. And that's how he knows that he feels the force.
Many thanks to Squarespace for their support of this show, because we couldn't do it without them. And because you
also could benefit from doing something with them. Because, hey, they provide people with websites and domains, but they do it in the best way possible because they make it so easy to build a beautiful website that is all you and exactly what you want it to be. They have templates created by world-class designers. You can customize just about anything about it with a few clicks. And before you know it, you have a beautiful website for yourself. It's also optimized for mobile right out of the box. I don't know if you've used the internet on a phone or a tablet, but if you listen to podcasts, almost definitely, you've probably done that. And you probably noticed not every website looks right on there. There's like weird dimensions to stuff sometimes, or like the scrolling's all funky. Squarespace sites are built to automatically work on that platform that almost everyone is using to see the internet now. So you'll be all set if you work with them. They also make buying domains simple. They have a 24/7 award-winning customer support team. They have everything you need, so head to squarespace.com/cracked for a free trial. And when you're ready to launch, use the offer code CRACKED to save 10% off your first purchase of a website or domain. That's squarespace.com/cracked, offer code CRACKED. Simple Contacts lets you conveniently renew your contact lens prescription and reorder your contacts from anywhere in minutes. It is vision care for the 21st century. The Simple Contacts vision test is self-guided and it takes less than 5 minutes. It isn't a replacement for your periodic full eye health exam, but it'll save you so much time when you need to renew and reorder. It's designed by ophthalmologists. A licensed doctor reviews every test. That way you can skip the office visit, but not the care. With Simple Contacts, you can get all the brands and types of lenses that you're used to. You can also save money because the vision test is only $20. Their lens prices are unbeatable and standard shipping is free. And I've enjoyed that experience myself. You may know me as, a glasses-wearing fella, but whether I'm acting in a thing, like we did a show called Galactic War Room that's set in the future, no glasses in the future, I needed contacts so I wouldn't be fumbling around knocking over robots. And so I got contacts, and Simple Contacts was such an easy way to do it. It came in the mail, I could double-check my prescription with their test and their system, and I just like it when things are that easy, and I think you will too. So get $20 off your contacts at simplecontacts.com/cracked20, or there's another way, you can enter code CRACKED20 at checkout. And that's just 20. You don't need to spell out 20, we're keeping it simple. That's simplecontacts.com/cracked20, or enter code CRACKED20 at checkout to get $20 off your contacts.
There's another World War II thing here. It's from Five Insane True Stories That Change How You Picture World War II by Zachary Frey. And in 1934, Nikola Tesla claimed that he built a death ray. So in the run-up to World War II, although he probably didn't know, he was like, I have constructed a death ray, and it's possible. And then he just didn't tell anyone how to do it. And most people did not believe him, except the government of Japan. And they tried to build a death ray for the war.
Yeah, I mean, speaking of Bond villain stuff, there are lots of examples in the Nazis too. Like, there's lots of examples of people getting into like insane supervillain weaponry, at least trying to. And there's all these plans for shit that is like, basically on the level of like base inside a volcano or, stuff like that. Or like, we'll destroy the sun unless, they give me $50 million or, it's almost like that level of like, death ray? Like, why would you even need that if you have like lots of machine guns and bombs? I don't know how it could be more efficient other than being cool and scary, right?
Because on its own, it's pretty goofy. And then what they ended up executing is ridiculous. Japan's government spent 1 million yen and recruited scientists from all over, including a future Nobel Prize winner, Shinichiro Tomonaga. The group of them working on Project Power came up with a death ray that they said worked and that it could kill someone from half a mile away. But the problem is the person you're trying to kill with it has to stand completely still for 5 to 10 minutes without moving, which is almost that Austin Powers joke with the steamroller, where the guy just doesn't get out of the way of it and screams at it until it runs him over.
But like, but in the 30s and 40s, like you already, I mean, I guess, they didn't have Japan didn't have nuclear weapons, but you already had very powerful bombs, missiles, torpedoes, long-range guns. What is the point of developing a death ray other than, like, being cool, right?
Right. What else does it do?
Other than being like, death ray, that's so badass. You're not like, like, even if it worked perfectly, like, I don't see how it's an upgrade over just guns, which are cheap and you have them already. Like,
Yeah. Yeah, guns are very similar to a ray in their way. It just shoots the thing directly on a line.
It's just not like glowing red and cool, and the thing doesn't like explode or like melt or whatever, right?
Yeah.
It's just, maybe there's some morale crushing, you know, they're like, oh, well, we hit them with the death ray and then they'll be so afraid of us. Or, you know, maybe that's like their tactical thinking, but really it just boils down to like, it's like a literal Bond villain. Like, this is just a crazy thing to throw into a movie to show how insane the villain is.
Yeah.
It'd be like 1960s, like special effects where the red looks all fake. It's just like a red line, like drawn onto the screen. And then it like, a guy's like, and kind of turns red, and then it cuts away, and then cuts back, and he's like, disappears or something.
Well, and as soon as you do that in your World War II movie, I feel like people will then just immediately say, oh, okay, this is one of those kind of goofy B movies. Like, there's a whole cottage industry of it's a zombie movie and they're Nazi zombies. Or like, I think there was one called Iron Sky where they like Nazis returned from the moon. You know, like one of those things where it's World War II elements, but a clear, dumb B movie that never happened. Like, if you do this real death ray that Japan tried to build, people would be like, oh, okay, they're like kidding. Okay.
Yeah. Sure. Or we're like trying to make them supervillains, you know, or like, it's like from the U.S. point of view. So like, we're making the Japanese like crazy, like.
But they try to do it. And also the article says that it's also hard to know exactly how the death ray worked because we don't know what happened to the prototype. And the main rumor is that they just threw it into a lake in despair after building it and also losing the war. They were like, forget it. I just dumped it in a lake somewhere.
In like the Japanese Bushido culture, whoever developed the death ray had to like commit suicide by death raying himself to like retain his family's honor.
Oh,
and he's like, I've brought shame upon like my military. I must go. And then he turns the ray on himself and just like hits it for like 10 minutes. He's just like standing there awkwardly. It's just like, I think I'm getting a little hot. I think it's working. I don't know.
Right. He wanted to do a little speech before, but then it takes so long. He has to just keep riffing. Like, and I honor. Ah, oh, man.
Yeah.
You know?
People like leaving the room.
This isn't as good.
Checking their phones. Analog phones. It just... They just have giant phones in their pocket, and they're, like, looking at it, walking around.
Still a phone.
Yeah.
Since you brought it up, there's Will Footnote, a video I did in the Hilarious Helmet History series about samurai, because there's a lot of misconceptions there. But also this article you guys did has an amazing, just really fun thing about samurai technology and kind of how they went into combat.
The actual samurai outfits. I mean, not all of them, but there are lots of like drawings, carvings, and some research about this that a lot of samurai went into battle with these giant balloon things on their back.
Yeah.
That sometimes I believe carried objects for war, but also was like sort of ornamental, ceremonial, something like that. But apparently looked ridiculous. It sounded like they looked like, speaking of turtles, they look like giant turtles, basically.
And there's one illustration in the article, too, but it was called a horo, and it was cloth or silk stitched over a big wooden frame. And so they had sort of kind of a giant shell-looking thing on their back. And then, especially when they were riding, it would inflate with air, sort of like just that gust of air would come through. And then it helped protect them from ranged weapons like arrows, which is neat. I wanted to know that samurai do that sooner. That would be very cool.
Yeah, I mean, it's an actual turtle shell, kind of.
It's a really good idea.
It inflates. You have a giant balloony thing on your back. And then I guess, like, when arrows come, you, like, bend over and it, like, boom, like, bounces. You know, it's like, what kind of ridiculous crap is that? Like,
right. Also, many sound effects.
Yeah.
Yes. A lot of, that kind of thing. Yeah.
It boing, and it goes back the other way and hits the guy who shot it.
Yeah, and then his duck bill is on his head, and he has to move it back down. You know, but for real, like the real carapace kind of thing they built themselves, that is cooler than what we get in the samurai movies we've got, like where Tom Cruise is a samurai, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And I would like to have seen that, but maybe they felt that's too wild of a thing to work into the movie.
Yeah, I feel like so many war movies in general, like they don't, no one protects themselves enough. Like, a lot of times they don't have helmets on just because it's like,
oh,
you want to like see their face and stuff like that. And so you know, these guys are trying to stay alive. They'll do anything to not get shot to death by arrows and shit. Like, it's pretty reasonable. But it's like in movies, it's just clunky and it's goofy looking. And samurai are supposed to be badass and very serene. And it shatters the myth if they're like wearing all this clunky shit and then like cowering from arrows, even though that's totally reasonable. Like, it's practical.
There's even that in almost all historical war movies thing. In an era when people had armor, I feel like the male hero will lose their helmet all the time.
Yeah.
And it's so we can see their cool flowing longer than average hair.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's like, oh, finally I can whip this around as I kill a Gaul or whatever we're fighting, you know?
Yeah, there's that one scene in Game of Thrones in the Blackwater battle where Stannis, they're like scaling the wall and he like looks over and the guy next to him gets like something dropped on his head and it just like squashes his head completely.
Oh, shoot.
And but Stannis doesn't have a helmet on because it's like you need to know it's Stannis.
Right.
And so it's like, what are you guys doing? Like, you could just have a guy drop a rock on you right now and you die instantly in the most violent way possible. Like,
yeah,
throw a little metal on your, you know, do something. And we know he's not going to die in like a random crossfire because he's a main character. So it's like almost like the characters yeah. know they don't need to protect themselves. It's like, if I die, it's going to be in a one-on-one battle with like the other hero.
Yeah.
I'm not just going to like get killed by a stray bullet or a stray arrow or something like that.
Yeah. And they don't even do that. Like, if I lose my helmet in a real life battle, I immediately stop and grub around to try to find
yeah.
it. Like, oh, where'd it go?
Yeah.
Oh, no. And that's not cool
time
at
out.
All.
Time out.
Right.
Yeah. William Wallace wearing this like huge, like protective helmet. And like when it falls off and he's like, guys, wait.
Okay.
Wait, everybody stop.
Everybody stop.
No, this doesn't count. This doesn't count.
Right. Time
this
out. Time out.
He's like
time
crossing
out.
His hands.
Yeah. Well, also, I feel like this is a good one with, because there's such a narrative demand with any battle, the heroes don't die of the very, very normal things of disease, random accident, friendly fire, never happens. Real life all the time. But that's why we probably won't get the Civil War movie where Stonewall Jackson is as crazy as he was. Stonewall Jackson, Confederate general, he thought his arms were different lengths. And so a thing he would do is just all of the time as he was going through life, he would lift one of his arms way up in the air because he felt that it would balance out his circulation. And so he was just Ministry of Silly Walking all the time with his arm, just always up. But then also he lost his arm to friendly fire and then it got its own burial and everything. And so there's a grave you can go visit to see Stonewall Jackson's arm. But they did that, and then he died of getting sick from that about a week later. So,
and it was his own soldier shot him in the arm, right?
Yeah, he got two bullets from his own Confederate troops in his arm. They had to take it off. And I feel like in a cool movie, it would be like, oh, we'll bury his arm because the rest of him lives on. You know, we'll keep this war going. And then he just dies later. So you just have to do a whole nother burial immediately, which is real slapsticky and weird.
I feel like American Sniper kind of circumvented that a little bit, where it was like the whole movie happens. And then at the end, it's like I'm going to see a friend or something like that. And then ends because like him getting shot by his friend would be like a really dark, weird ending.
Oh, I actually, because
like
I haven't seen that movie and I don't know much about Chris Kyle's life, but was he accidentally shot by a friend?
He was killed by a friend who like went on a rampage, who had like some mental issues and had a gun and just shot him. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it's like, again, almost like too ridiculous for a movie that it's like this great sniper was killed by his own man. It's like almost like a poetic thing you'd write or something, but it's just, since it's so recent, it's just sad and crazy. It's like so crazy.
Yeah. Because I'm thinking of Lawrence of Arabia now, where they work in the real thing where he died in just an accident riding his motorcycle after the wars, after World War One, and so they make it really sort of poetic and noble seeming because motorcycles are kind of cool. But more often it's some sad, weird version where just something happens.
Just imagining a movie where it's like, yeah, like William Wallace or something like that, where he goes through this entire movie, all of these violent battles, and then get shot. Well, William Wallace won't get shot. Stonewall Jackson gets shot by like his own troops who didn't, I think it wasn't like in war. I think they like didn't believe who he was or something and shot him on purpose.
Yeah, it was around the Battle of Chancellorsville in May of 1863, and he was returning from some kind of reconnaissance or meeting or something, and there was confusion. And so it wasn't like in the thick of
It wasn't in a crossfire and he got shot, like, which happens often. And again, also doesn't really happen in movies. It's not very often that guys get shot by their own troops or whatever. Just imagining a biopic about a guy, you know, how epic his life was or something, and then he gets shot by his own guys on purpose in this goofy, stupid accident, gets his arm amputated, then dies from that also. And also has a funeral for his arm. Like, imagine that in a movie for...
Yeah, well, because we'll link to... There is a headstone and everything, and you can go see the grave for... I think it just says Arm of Stonewall Jackson.
Is it far away from the rest of his body?
The arm's in Virginia. I don't know where the rest of his body is. But it was 8 days later he died of pneumonia from, among other things, getting very sick because he lost his arm. Uh-huh. But if you, like...
And because they... probably sawed it off, like, while he bit on a cork or something like that, right? It's just like, God knows what medical procedure he underwent there.
But in, like, in U.S. Civil War movies from, like, Gone with the Wind to now, it's often very romantic and very epic, and there's a lot of... If you did a movie where you showed the blow-by-blow of slapsticky loss of arm of guy who has crazy ideas about how arms work, that's buried. And then if you did all the blow-by-blow of that and made a movie of it, I think the South would be very mad. Like, they would think you're making fun of them or something and trying to, like, just dunk on one of the key Confederate generals.
There's also a very Twilight Zone, Tales from the Crypt ironic twist there, too, that, like, he was always obsessed with arms, and then his arm brought him down. You know, it's like that's like a hacky thing that was real, that if you just did it, would be too stupid. Like... He's like has dreams about his arm or something, and I know how I'm gonna go, and then it happens, something like that.
Yeah. Well, now I'm thinking of that. There's a Rick and Morty episode where just Morty's arm gets a serum in it, and then it's giant, and it has a mind of its own, and he names it Armathy. Uh-huh. And it's any arm fixated plot pretty much has to be comedy. It's just too weird.
Uh-huh.
And then Stonewall Jackson, it would just be a very serious tale of this man just believed he had funky arms that he needed to manage all the time.
I feel like it's funny, though. Again, it's a little relatable that this famous historical person had this thing about himself that bothered him, like a slightly longer arm. I guess it's not entirely cosmetic if he felt it was messing up his circulation, but it's like every photo of myself, I feel like my jaw is crooked. And so whenever I'm like taking a selfie, I like straighten it out a little bit. And if I don't do that, it looks like my mouth is like a little off to the side. And no one cares, but it like bothers me.
Right, we all have those
everyone
things.
Has that, right? Yeah. And like it's just... imagining Stonewall Jackson giving speeches and being like very self-conscious about holding his arms a certain way. That's very humanizing in like a very stupid way, but very, you know, it's very funny to me. Like almost like a celebrity being concerned about like a TMZ photographer catching them from the wrong side or something like that. It's almost like that, but like in an era where that was not like ever the case. He's going to get like flashbulbed or like painted from the wrong angle.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah.
I feel like that leads well into another Civil War figure maybe people have heard of named Abraham Lincoln. He was at one point the president. And he is someone who we feel is very, very serious. And I remember seeing the movie Lincoln and thinking that they captured him being very silly. He told a joke to people about – it was like a poop joke about – Washington's picture making the British poo faster, so you hang it in a outhouse, which it turns out was a real joke that he loved in life. But Lincoln was like very, very funny. He loved comedy. He did impressions. And if you did a Lincoln comedy movie, people would think you were kidding. Like it was straight up silly.
Lincoln's another thing, like you're saying, like historical fiction, World War II with zombies or something like that. I feel Lincoln's like another like trope that it'd be like wacky Lincoln or, you know.
Yeah, there's a whole movie where he hunts vampires.
Yeah.
That was made. I don't know if people know that.
Clone High is about, you know, Lincoln is the main character. It's like a high school.
Oh, yeah.
You know, something like that. Or there was like a Hard Drinking Lincoln was I think it was a Mike Reiss, Al Jean cartoon or something. It's just Lincoln is such a, like an iconic,
Yeah, the Rick and Morty character who's half Lincoln, half Hitler. It's like a genetic experiment.
Yeah.
Yeah, people do bits with him all the time.
Yeah, he's in Bill and Ted's, you know.
Oh, right.
He ends the movie with, and party on, dudes. You know, it's like, because he's like such an iconic image or whatever, that like, it's such an easy thing to then twist and then be like, no, he's wacky. But he just was.
Right.
He like already was that. And the most, you know, the bloodiest period in American history, probably the most painful, dark time, and like dealing with the most serious issue in like American history. And is this like jokester, basically. There's a detail. He did impressions of his opponents in debates.
Yeah.
Which is really funny. Often. Like, I mean, again, relevant to now where it's like, where is the dignity in politics or something? And you're like, it's never been dignified. Like, it's all like, seriously, it's like.
Yeah, it's always been cruel and
Lincoln
mean and
like
silly.
Imitating Jefferson Davis or whatever.
Yeah, because like contemporaries writing about Lincoln, partly because the past was very racist, but one way they would say he was good at impressions was that he can do almost every ethnicity. Like he can do Dutchmen, he can do Irishmen, he can do black people. Amazing.
Yeah.
But also there's a famous story of Lincoln was campaigning to get reelected to the Illinois State House of Representatives. And he had an opponent named Jesse B. Thomas. He was in a live debate with him. Thomas said mean things about Lincoln, and Lincoln decided to get back at him. He would just do a really mean impression of how Thomas talked and walked and looked. And the crowd was howling in laughter, and observers say that it made Thomas cry publicly. Like, his opponent wept because the impression was so mean, and the crowd laughed so hard at it. And that was Abraham Lincoln running for office.
Basically doing an 8 mile, like, rap battle.
Right.
Yeah.
Like there's movies and plays of the Lincoln-Douglas debates and how stentorian and perfect of an orator Lincoln was. And he would also do crazy bits about people.
Yeah, he's just spitting rhymes and like a crew of people like, oh, shit, as soon as he like lands a thing about like this guy's doing an impression of.
It's like the Comedy Central roast of Lincoln's opponents. And he's killing it. He's just doing great.
I see Vice President Hannibal Hamlin is here, and it like cuts to him, and he's like, oh, here we go.
And we're trying to watch it like, the references are dated, but this was the golden age, you know? This was.
And then they have like a couple stock people who are clearly there just to make jokes about them. It's like, you know, like Vanilla Ice is on the panel or something.
Oh, right.
It's like, oh, they're just there so they can rip on them, but, you know, they're getting paid.
Right, like Secretary of War Edwin Stanton has to have some jokes about celebrities of the time.
Yeah.
Linda, and also that Lincoln story from 1840, you might think like, oh, it's young Lincoln before he matured, right? Like, but there was also a story of Lincoln held a meeting with his cabinet to tell them about his idea for the Emancipation Proclamation, which is a pretty significant thing. Mm-hmm. And apparently he led that meeting with reading them a humor article he really liked.
Yeah, I think it like delayed the meeting and people were confused. He like was trying to show people how funny a thing was. It's exactly like showing people a thing from your phone.
Yeah, like
it's like
a
your
YouTube
boss.
Yeah.
Your boss is like, "Oh, check this out." And you're like, "I can't, like, can we just get to work?" And he's like, "No, check this out. No, this is really funny." And it's like a video and it's playing and it's like not, you can't really hear it and everyone's huddled around the phone and it's kind of awkward. And you like, you laugh before the funny part because you're like trying to be polite. And you're like, ha, 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 that is pretty funny. He's like, no, wait.
The piece was called A High-Handed Outrage in Utica. It was by Artemus Ward, who was like a top comedy writer at the time.
I'm laughing already.
And he read it for them and people, like you say, were not into it. And then reportedly Lincoln then said, quote, "Gentlemen, why don't you laugh without the fearful strain that is upon me night and day? If I did not laugh, I should die, and you need this medicine as much as I do," end quote. And then rolled out, also, this is the Emancipation.
That's a good joke saver. You know, that's like, that's like, you know, like Letterman staring into the camera. It's just like, "Gentlemen, why do you not laugh? For this is," whenever like a Letterman joke fails, he stares in the camera and says that. It's just like so dark.
Right.
"My heart is weary with sorrow as our nation tears itself apart. So I see this guy came out tonight," and he like points to the guy. Yeah, just trying to like do some crowd work to save it.
Lisa Lampanelli is here.
Yeah.
Secretary of the Interior Lisa Lampanelli is also a
the only lady who I could fit my entire hat inside her vagina. Oh, cut to her like laughing, like really loud and clapping.
That is so deeply the joke he would do.
Oh, I did a little freelance writing for the
for the Lincoln roast.
The Lincoln roast, yeah.
Folks, that's the episode for this week. My thanks to Dan Hopper for changing the way I will picture stakeouts, dogfights, and Abraham Lincoln forever. And in our footnotes, you will find hilarious material on all those historical things that we covered, plus some extras we didn't. And I always say this whenever he's on the show, because it is true, follow Dan Hopper on Twitter. He is one of the best on there. He is at Dan Hop. And you know who else is great? The Budos Band. Their song Chicago Falcon is our theme music. This episode was engineered by Sam Kiefer and edited by Chris Souza. If you love this episode, that's great. If you hated it, let me know about it on social media. That's right, social media, a thing that will increasingly creep into period dramas with every passing year because of just kind of how the flow of time works. Weird and fun. That's the way it is. My own weird and fun Twitter account is at Alex Schmitty. My Instagram is at Alex Schmitztagram. I'm on the wider internet at my website, alexschmitty.com. And I'm happy to say we will be back next week with more Cracked Podcast. So how about that? Talk to you then.
This has been an Earwolf production, executive produced by Scott Aukerman, Chris Bannon, and Colin Anderson. For more information and content, visit earwolf.com.